way here on ESPN Plus alongside my good buddy Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Just a few minutes later than scheduled here between us. Herc, we lasted just one show in studio and you shipped me to Frisco, Texas, and I'm still stuck here. How about that?
I told you, Dallas, you can miss your flight. It's happened to me last time. Who was it? Somebody was in Columbus. Oh, Campeones Cup. I missed my flight. I got stranded, stayed overnight. Welcome to the club. You're doing it from your hotel room. I commend you on that. You did not miss out.
No, I did not. Of course, I was here for the finale of the She Believes Cup last night. We'll be talking about the U.S. women's team a little bit later. I know you've been busy today. You had an interview with Phil Neville. So that should be very, very interesting as we talk a little bit Inter Miami. We got to get you all caught up on all the CONCACAF Champions League stuff that's been going on, including an MLS Liga MX showdown. Plus, Herc, a drippin' or trippin' MLS kit edition. And of course, you can't see the dripping or tripping, but you can hear all about it on the podcast of this show. But Herc, we got to start, unfortunately, with some injury news. And it's injury news about none other than Weston McKennie of Juventus in the U.S. men's national team. On Tuesday, he suffered not one, Herc, but we find out two fractures in his left foot against Villarreal. Sources confirming to our Jeff Carlisle, actually, that McKennie is set to miss between 8 and 12 weeks, which would obviously rule him out for the three decisive qualifiers coming up in late March. Herc, does this then jeopardize the United States' automatic spot, let's say automatic spot, in Qatar?
Absolutely. Let's for a second try to forget about the fact that he's probably the most informed player the U.S. men's national team has. Let's for a second try to forget for a fact that he's easily been the most consistent. I mean, since a lot of different pundits on a lot of different networks, a lot of different fans criticized him after that first window, he's been stellar for club and country.
Just say my name.
That's you, Sebastian Salazar. Can we for a second acknowledge the U.S. men's national team without Weston McKennie? They've played four games on the road. They've won, literally won without him, and that was the Honduras versus the worst team in the window. It's a team that can't keep a clean sheet without him. They're definitely different without Weston McKennie. Of course, this hurts the U.S. men's national team. Of course, this impacts the direct berth to the World Cup.
The spot's already in jeopardy, right? I mean, let's be honest. There's a long way to go with these three games. So I think it's not fair to just say that McKinney's injury could be the thing that jeopardizes this team, because there's no guarantee that they could go down and win in Mexico or go down and win in Costa Rica with Weston McKennie. That's something this program has always struggled to do. I think the point that you raise is kind of important. It's like, who else can you really at this point count on, not just for goals, but for consistent performances in this U.S. team? And a lot of that has to do with rotation and stuff like that. But I think really there's very few guys that you say, okay, Greg Berhalter's going to absolutely 100% with a Sharpie put this guy's name in the 11. And Weston McKennie is one of the only few guys in that category. Right now, Herc, let's break it down in percentages. With Weston McKennie out, what kind of percentage do you think that there is that the U.S. won't qualify for Qatar?
3%.
3%? Why so low and why so precise?
Do you remember what the percentage was heading into the Trinidad and Tobago game in 2018? The SPI, I remember vividly. SPI gave the United States men's national team a 3% chance of not making the World Cup. What do you think happened? That 3% came true.
I was there. Okay?
Yeah. 3% because it's highly unlikely. All they have to do is beat Panama. I know that sounds very easy. I'm not convinced it's as easy as people think. But all you have to do is win that home game. And you are going to play against a Mexico team that you've, I don't want to say dominated, but at least score-wise, scoreline-wise, you've won three times in a calendar year. So it's minimal.
But how big was McKennie in those games against Mexico?
That's the thing. Nations League final, he was massive. Every set piece, it seemed like he won. And then you're talking about that Cincinnati game, that Dos Acero, he was a deciding factor in that as well. He just screams big-time player to me. This is going to be a huge loss.
I might put it a little bit higher than 3 because the Panama win doesn't necessarily guarantee you automatic, right? Like if you only beat Panama and Costa Rica goes perfect through the window, the U.S. could end up in fourth. So you got to beat Panama and do something else in one of those road games. That's going to be difficult without Weston McKennie, but I think the U.S. still very much then in the driver's seat.
But that's why I said 3% because that 3% for the U.S. meant that Costa Rica had to lose against Panama, meant that Mexico had to lose against Honduras, and those things happen. So like you said, Costa Rica would have to play out, win out. 3 points every single game, 9-point window.
So let's help a good friend of the program, then U.S. Men's National Team manager Greg Berhalter, with a big decision, Herc, that looms ahead of that March 24th World Cup qualifier at Azteca against Mexico. Who replaces Weston McKennie in the 11? I think we should focus in on the Mexico game, because if we're being honest, it's going to be a rotation through the three matches,
correct,
right? Whoever it is not going to get all three starts. So, wow, look at that. We got six choices for you. Who are you taking, Herc?
Okay, for argument's sake, I'm not going to change the formation.
We don't do anything for argument's sake on this show.
Okay, I'm going to save us the trouble, and I'm going to go man for man, like for like. I think the obvious choice would be a Luca De La Torre. Luca's an interesting player to me. He's a player who does very well technically with the ball in tight spaces, yet he does very well in transition. It's something that Greg Berhalter criticized him, according to Luca De La Torre, but he does very well in Heracles. I know it's a small sample size. I know we only saw a little bit of him, but he's very familiar with the players around him. He's been playing with these guys since youth national team level. He's got a little chip on his shoulder. He's got confidence. He's got the contagious work rate. Good on both sides of the ball. Very crafty inside tight spaces. This will be a game where I think you will need to be very good physically in the center midfield. He offers that verticality. He offers that good play in possession. I think he'd be a vital player in that game.
De La Torre was really, really good against Honduras. I wonder, though, if you're not being a little bit prisoner of the moment, right? It was not just Honduras, a totally unmotivated, literally frozen Honduras. But he did play well. There are a lot of other options, though. I know you say you don't want to, like, switch the tactics, but I look at a guy like Kellen Acosta, and if you figure that the U.S. is going to not dominate possession at Azteca, would it not make sense to put in like an Adams and an Acosta there? Because that gives you a little bit more defensive cover.
Listen,
in front of that back four.
Let me ask you about experience too.
What about Leggett and Roldan? Don't you want experience at Azteca?
Oh, yeah. How many of those players have experienced Azteca?
No, but they got way more professional experience than Luca De La Torre, no?
Luca De La Torre is playing in the Eredivisie. And I don't want to get into this who's got more experience, does it matter type in CONCACAF, because then we're going to go back to the Panama game. All the experience of World Cup qualifying, and then look what happened. You bottled it against Panama in Panama. So don't focus so much on experience. Focus on what you've done well against Mexico. What has worked against Mexico? When you can play through their midfield, when you can go physically toe-to-toe with Mexico, because technically, tactically, the U.S., they're almost on par there. They're just as good. And dynamically, they are better. So play to your strengths versus Mexico.
You said you didn't want to change the lineup, but there's probably a couple other guys you could drop into that conversation too. A Brendan Aaronson, a Christian Pulisic. Let's focus in on Christian Pulisic, right? Because he did score in the Champions League this week. What a moment for the young American. His first Champions League goal of the season coming on Tuesday. Chelsea beating Lille 2-0 at Stamford Bridge. Goal came in the 63rd minute, not the game winner, but kind of the game clincher, if you will. He was playing in that left wing attacking midfield role, was subbed out in the 80th minute for Herc's favorite player, Timo Werner. Herc, we're less than a month until the Mexico game. Will Christian Pulisic's form last?
It better last. And yes, why is it every time we hit the Champions League knockout rounds, Christian Pulisic transforms himself into this best of CONCACAF level type of player? He did it last year. He enters that form when you're like, wow, he rivals Alphonso Davies. Wow, he will rival a Jonathan David. He will rival any player in this continent. It happened last year. Okay, it's happening again this year. He has an air for the dramatic. He has an air for the grand stage. And who is his favorite victim in CONCACAF? He may be struggling in World Cup qualifiers. If you look at the numbers, if you look at the overall play, but he loves to play against Mexico. He may not always play well against Mexico, but iconic moments.
Yes.
Nations League, decisive penalty, and then the iconic celebration. The 2-0 in Cincinnati. He wasn't even a starter. Comes off the bench. Boom! Header off of Timothy Weah. Cross. Iconic celebration. Man in the mirror. Jersey. This man loves to play against Mexico. And he's gotten confident. He is putting the ball in the back of the net. He is playing where he wants. And he's doing it well.
Will the form continue? It will if the health continues, right? We always have to put that asterisk out there with Christian Pulisic. But right now, if you look at what's happening around Chelsea, you got to feel really good about where Christian Pulisic is. There's a great article right now on our website, ESPN.com, James Ollie writing it, about how Pulisic has basically made himself a very, very difficult decision for Thomas Tuchel. This is from the article. He made back-to-back starts, one in this game against Leo, before against Crystal Palace. That's only the third time that's happened this season. But maybe more critically, Herc, they were back-to-back starts, not just in the same position, but in his best position. That's going to obviously help him with Chelsea. It's going to obviously help him with the U.S. national team. The other thing when we talk about Chelsea is, if you ever watch ESPN FC, you know, the whole conversation around Chelsea right now is who's not playing.
Yeah.
And that's Lukaku. And I know, you know, they're not the same player. They're not the same position. But it's a guy who's right now very much out of favor, kind of out of the rotation, and it might open up more spots and more playing time for Pulisic. And you say he's big in big games? Well, he's got a big one coming up this weekend, Sunday, the final of the Carabao Cup against Liverpool, who we know he's had some success against before. Great opportunity to get another start, maybe a third in a week, and get another big game under his belt, and maybe another big game performance. I'm starting to like what I'm seeing from Christian Pulisic at Chelsea, definitely making a turnaround there. What about the pressure, Herc? Because the last article we saw from James Ollie on ESPN.com was about how the pressure is starting to mount for Christian Pulisic. So with Weston McKennie out, is the pressure now back on Captain America?
I don't think it ever left Captain America, and he better embrace this pressure. Christian Pulisic, you can talk about the pressure that he feels at the U.S. men's national team, but every time we've seen him in a knockout round in the Champions League, that pressure doesn't seem to bother him. He seems to excel under that pressure. He seems to actually enjoy it. Did you see his dance? Did you see the gritty?
We're not talking about the Champions League, though, Herc. We're talking about
bigger
with the
stage.
U.S.
That's a bigger stage, so embrace it.
If you embrace it,
listen to what I am saying.
He's the guy with the U.S.
If you embrace it, with the Champions League on that stage, embrace it here. Be that man here. You know you're going to go play against Mexico. Not in the second leg of the window. I'm sorry, not in the second game of the window. Not in the third game of the window. The first game of that window. If you win in Azteca, you are historic, and you put yourself in prime position for what's next. If you're Greg Berhalter, don't do this thing like you did against Panama. Don't focus on what's coming after. Focus on what's in front of you. Same thing for Christian Pulisic. Embrace that pressure.
It's different pressure, though. I really do believe that, Herc. I think it's so different when you are expected to contribute than when you are expected to lead. Like, maybe you have a better or a different memory of Christian Pulisic. To me, the best games I've ever seen Pulisic in a U.S. jersey are still the World Cup qualifiers pre-2018. Those last two games of that cycle, he was the only half-bright spot in Cuba. And the game against Panama in Orlando, I don't think I've ever seen an American player, and I've said this on the show before, dominate a World Cup qualifier like that. Maybe you go way back and you find a Claudio Reyna. You might find moments from Landon Donovan. But Pulisic in that game, when he was expected to contribute but not expected to lead, was untouchable. And I do think that Weston McKennie being there would have taken a lot of pressure off his shoulders.
Weston McKennie being there, Giovanni Reyna being there, of course it would have taken pressure off Christian Pulisic, but Christian Pulisic needs to do what every young, I shouldn't even say what every, because only Landon Donovan, Clint Dempsey probably had somewhat of that magnitude, but he needs to embrace this, Seb. Mexico is his favorite victim, then go out there and do it. Have fun.
Yep.
Because he doesn't have, and this is a very minute, the U.S. men's national team fan base isn't toxic like you will see English fan bases. There isn't his paper. His name won't be in the papers, the following day. It won't be like that. Come on, man. Embrace this type of pressure. This is the fun part.
Bro, you are the most toxic thing on the internet, and that's quite saying something, Hercules going. Carabao Cup final coming Saturday, or Sunday, excuse me, on ESPN Plus. Chelsea against Liverpool. Coverage starts at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time, 8:30 a.m. out there on the West Coast for you, Herc. Again, the Carabao Cup final on ESPN Plus. Of course, it is a Europa League Thursday. Let's check in on CONCACAF involvement the last week throughout both the Europa League and the Champions League. Hector Herrera getting a 90-minute goal against Manchester United, Herc. A lot of people saying he played really, really well. I thought he played pretty well.
He played well. Let's be honest. He played well. Guess who was in attendance? General manager Pat Onstad of the Houston Dynamo, who, by the way, today happened to make some moves. International slot from Philly and some allocation money. What do you make of that?
I like it. I like it. Conrad de la Fuente with a goal in the Europa Conference League. Eric Gutierrez as well. So a pretty good week all around for CONCACAF players in Europe. Let's turn our attention to the U.S. women's national team in the She Believes Cup. United States against Iceland. U.S., it's a must win for this team. Iceland only needing a draw to kind of pull the shock upset in the She Believes. Goal scoring got going in the 37th minute. Carolina Macario. Oh, Turk, it was nasty.
Oh, that is filthy. The moment she gets this and she cuts in, you know she's going to shoot. She knows she's going to shoot. You know who doesn't? The goalkeeper.
Of course, another goal from Macario in the 45th minute here. You think she meant to do this? Some discussion on the broadcast last night.
No, I think she's crossing that. But like I always say, I meant to be dangerous.
I don't know, dude. She takes a look there. I think she sees the goalie off her line. We got to give her some credit there. Okay, 60th minute. Mallory Pugh, so much talent and starting to come to life for the national team again. Here she makes it 3.
Ah, it's a filthy through ball right there. And then a sweet little finish.
Iceland really starting to fall apart late as the U.S. press forward. A 2-on-1 here. Pugh to Macario to Pugh. 4.
I thought Barcelona played today.
Look at that. Here comes the 5th in the 88th minute. Christy Mewis tapping home to make it 5-0 as the U.S. wins the She Believes Cup for the 3rd straight time. Here's the manager, Vlad Kalinanovsky.
There's still a lot room for growth in the group, not just the midfielders all over the field, but I feel like we can all see the potential. Now, I said this before, it's a process. It's going to take time, and I'm glad that this game finished the way it did, and I'm very happy for the result, very happy for the players, but realistically, this is still not enough. We still have to get better and better as we go forward.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Big win on the field. Big win off the field, too, for the U.S. Just come a couple days after the women's team and the Federation announcing that big settlement in the equal pay lawsuit. The U.S. bouncing back after the disappointing opener in the She Believes Cup to win it for the 5th time in 7 years. Julie Foudy and I got to cover the whole tournament, and last night we broke it down from over at Toyota Stadium.
Well, Julie, it didn't get off to a brilliant start for the United States today. It took 37 minutes for the Americans to finally break through against Iceland. But once they broke that dam, boy, they rolled 5-0 the final score.
And I do give this younger group a lot of credit, because there is the tendency, and especially when you're younger, especially given the fact that they tied Czech Republic 0-0 and they couldn't break through, to get frustrated. And you didn't see that. You didn't see the body language change with this group. You saw them keep at it, and then Katarina Macario does her magic, which is so interesting, because we talked to her last night, and what's the thing we talked about with her is patience and not getting frustrated with herself and not beating herself up, and that paid off with those 2 goals, huge goals leading into the halftime. We talked about it in the telecast, but to go in at halftime 0-0 with a young group like that and a lot of pressure in a game that mattered, where you needed a result and they had no veterans to turn to, it's a very different halftime talk than going in 2-0 up.
You talk about pressure. I wonder how much pressure you think was on the manager, Vlatko Andonovski, tonight. There had been a bit of a struggle, not just at the Olympics, but really in some of the games since, to manufacture offense. If they hadn't won tonight, yeah, they would have not won the She Believes Cup in probably one of the years with the weakest She Believes field that we've seen. I mean, he had to win tonight, didn't he?
And you could see it in that first half. Usually in Andonovski, it's a pretty stoic, composed sideline demeanor. And with some of those early misses and chances, he was visibly like, "Dah!" And you don't see that a lot from him. So I do think there was a lot of pressure on him to get a performance like they did tonight, to get the goals, to show that this younger group is coming along. Because I also think there were a lot of people who said, yeah, we understand you need to see those younger players and you need to see them now, but why not layer in a few more veterans into the mix to help them along? And his answer to that was, I don't have the time. With COVID delaying, with the Olympics, with the World Cup qualifiers doubling as Olympic qualifiers, I need to see those young kids. I need to get the minutes now. And I think that win tonight justified that move.
Let's look at the She Believes Cup tournament as a whole and kind of think ahead to the World Cup qualifying that you mentioned, which will be July and down in Monterrey, an Olympic qualifying as well. Can you do a stock up on a player? Was there somebody in this tournament? Let's take Katarina Macario aside, because we just talked about her, but one of the other field players that for you really improved their stock for that tournament?
Well, Mal Pugh was an obvious choice, right?
Yeah.
I think she came off the bench in the second game, started the first game. She's playing confident and with a joy that you didn't see in years past.
Yeah.
I mean, she came in early, as we know, with the Olympic team in 2016 and had some success early, but then we've seen her play with three different clubs team, be injured, hasn't played with a lot of joy. And she's back with a step, and she's gliding, and she's getting in and getting into good position. So I thought she looked really good. The other one that surprised me in this tournament, I thought Rose looked really good in the first turn,
in the first
game. That didn't surprise me. But who came in for Rose in this tournament is Ashley Sanchez.
Yeah.
I thought she had a really impressive She Believes Cup, and in particular game today and this last game, and that we've always known she's a creative player, and she loves to get into that attacking center mid position, but she just buzzes all over.
So smooth on the ball.
Yeah, very good in tight spaces. So I really thought Sanchez had a performance as well.
Back-to-back starts for her to end the She Believes Cup. Let's talk about all the off-field stuff that's been happening around this team. We had Cindy Parlow-Cohn, who joined us at halftime. We had Abby Wambach joining us at halftime for reaction to the news that we got on Tuesday, the equal pay lawsuit that has hung over this team since early 2019, finally settled this week. What'd you make of it?
We did a little jig when it settled yesterday.
It really does. It traces back beyond 2019 to like 2016 when the first EEOC was filed. And I know for you, it really traces back to the 90s. Right?
Yeah, I mean, we were fighting for equitable pay back then, not equal pay. But as this current team should be, fighting for a very long fight for equal pay. And honestly, it was a lot of text chains. It was a lot of discussions with a lot of older players about how proud they felt for this moment, that this team was able to take it over the line. And they're not there yet. Obviously, this settlement requires
contingent on the CBA.
And there's a lot of work to be done in that CBA. Talking to Cindy tonight, I mean, they have to get to equal pay with that FIFA prize money. And that's the last piece of the puzzle, which requires the men honestly giving something up. And I think they're going to get there. It's the first time I've heard them all optimistic about it. But the fact that we're in a position where we know no three parties involved, the men, the women, and U.S. soccer are going to sign anything except for it being something they feel is fair to all parties is a great sign going forward.
Real quick, just to wrap things up, because you mentioned the 90s, I feel like there's been a contentious nature to the relationship between the women's national team and the federation for a really long time.
Yeah.
Are we past that now?
I hope so, because it's so energy draining. I mean, that's the thing that has been honestly so hard. I mean, you sue your employer right before you go to a World Cup in 2019.
And you win that World Cup.
And then you go win that World Cup. And then it's just these constant battles, and the little things become big things. And going back again to the 90s and the 2000s and all the fights we've had, and now I know this current generation, you know, carrying them on, it's a waste of energy.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the most important thing, honestly, is you get to focus on the game again and put all of that to the side. And it was important for them to fight for it, but now they can focus on the game, and that's liberating in itself.
Julie, always great to be with you. Let's go get warm, shall we?
Thank you for giving me your gloves.
That's where my gloves went. Okay, now we get it. The U.S. women then now winning on and off the field.
In case you missed it, Katerina Macario with a message taped on her wrist last night that's been making the rounds. You see it here, showing it off after she scored. It said, "Protect trans kids." This comes one day after Texas Governor Greg Abbott pushed to equate gender-affirming health care for transgender minors to child abuse. A strong message from Macario, the rest of the team. This also comes not long after the state of Texas jeopardized women's rights further with the most aggressive abortion ban since Roe v. Wade, Herc. And I think it's important to bring this up now because we have seen in the past organizations choose to pull their games from states where they don't feel their values are represented.
Yeah.
U.S. Soccer right now is an organization that's talking an awful lot about values. I'm still here in the state of Texas, and I'm finding it harder and harder to believe that Cindy Parlow-Cohn, now the president of the U.S. Soccer Federation, is going to feel comfortable, or should feel comfortable, Herc, sending of all teams, but definitely the U.S. women's national team, into this state. Because if you're an organization and you come into a state like Texas where the government is doing what it's doing, you're bringing your business here and you're bringing your fans' business here, and you're kind of co-signing on what's going on. And it's clearly not something that the players on the women's national team are content with or accepting of or wanting to support. And if you're the U.S. Soccer Federation trying to bridge a new relationship with this U.S. women's national team and all your national teams, I think it's something important to consider.
Yeah, not only the women's national team players, but the fans, those fans who pay their money and support this team. And let me just start off with Macario. It's always impressive when somebody with a platform, a role model, uses said platform for good, uses said platform to send a message. This is what we want. This is all we're asking of. Anybody who has a platform has a responsibility, quite frankly. And the U.S. women's national team do a very, very good job at that.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, let's move on to the CONCACAF W qualifiers. So we know the U.S. women's national team, they're already good. They're set for the CONCACAF W championship, which will be taking place July in Monterrey. These are the teams trying to qualify for it. This is Nicaragua against Turks and Caicos. The final score here, 19-0. This reminds me of my youth career.
How about Yesenia Flores? 22 years old, 6 goals in 66 minutes. That's insane.
That's a Hercules Gomez-esque goal return.
Oh, no keeper. Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, we got to work on that.
That trip's a little fast, huh?
Yeah. It's some epic goal or epic fail. Hey, what's the worst victory or what's the worst defeat you suffered and what's the biggest victory you had?
Worst defeat was probably when I played in MLS, LA Galaxy. We lost like 5-0, I think. Worst or best win? When I was young, we won 21-0, 10 years old.
From CONCACAF to the CONCACAF Champions League. Round of 16, the only MLS Liga MX matchup that we got. Montreal against Santos. Santos winning the first leg in Torreón, but just barely. Romel Kioto levels it here in the 9th minute. Herc, what's up with Acevedo?
Yeah, well, that turf plays fast, I said. You got to come out. You got to win it. And Kioto, first man there. Silky finish without an angle.
All right. Something special about Montreal at the Stade Olympique in CONCACAF Champions League. 22nd minute.
Oh,
Jordi Mihailovic.
My God. First, Kioto steps on the ball like he's playing indoor, and then this finish, emphatic, tight space, and take it home.
Santos with a chance here just before the half. Nothing doing.
Nah, they really didn't do much offensively. And how about this? This is how they were feeling. Look at this shot. Oh, my. Oh.
I'm not sure if this game was good Montreal or bad Santos. We'll discuss that later. 52nd minute, more from Montreal. Kioto, Acevedo good there, and then get some help off the line.
Oh, and the law is getting a little feisty. Leo, you don't want that smoke.
A couple minutes later, Acevedo, big save again, for the moment anywhere, keeping Santos in it. But shortly after that, Montreal get their third. Mihailovic, the assist, Kone the goal.
Yeah, Kone with the goal, but look at Jordi Mihailovic get his head up, scan the field, and then find the nice, easy little tapping.
And so that's how it finishes. Montreal 3-0 on the day, eliminating Santos 3-1 on aggregate. And here's what it means. That's right, Pedro Caixinha has been relieved of his duties as the manager of Santos. 2 months, not even 2 months, not even 10 games, Herc, did he last. So what happened here? Is the sack warranted, and was it your interview that jinxed him?
It could have been my interview that jinxed him. It's so difficult for me to sit here with a straight face and say this sack was warranted. By the way, Pedro Caixinha wasn't even at the game. He was in his hotel room. He had COVID. So he got fired while he's sick, while he's COVID and he's in treatment right now, not back in Mexico. He was relieved of his duties. But let me tell you about Santos Laguna. Santos Laguna has a short memory. Pedro Caixinha won multiple trophies with them. And Santos Laguna also forgets they've gutted. The organization has gutted Santos Laguna to help two clubs. Its sister team, Atlas, who were champions last season. Okay, their best players went there to reinforce that team. And then you sold off your best players to Club America. What you left this Santos Laguna team, this Pedro Caixinha team, is a reflection of what we see today. I think they're better than that record, but their last place in Liga MX, 2 points, the worst defense in all of Mexico. And if you know one thing about Pedro Caixinha teams, defensively, they are good. Instead of giving them a chance to right this ship, because there's no promotion relegation, so you're not going to get relegated, instead of giving them that chance, you yank him. I think it's more of a message to the fans than anything else. Pedro Caixinha, he's been better than this in Mexico, and I think sometimes in sports, and especially in Liga MX, we have a short memory.
You know, I always thought of Santos as one of the like better run organizations in Mexico. And I think when I say better run, I think I mean patient, right? Like
right.
You have to be cool in these moments and not overreact. We see that so much in Mexican soccer where coaches are just hired and fired. And this feels like that, which is kind of out of step for Santos. I'm with you. You would have thought the kind of the past would have done him some justice, bought him some time. I wonder, though, if they really truly believe that this team can do better. Because if you look at the last two seasons, at least, they're top five. I mean, they're in dead last place now. So you can assume that this team can do somewhat better. I don't know how much better without Pedro Caixinha, but somewhat better. Let's talk about the MLS Liga MX dynamic of this, because now Major League Soccer is 1-for-1, batting 1,000% against Liga MX this year. Is it circumstance, or is this the beginning of the trend and maybe the year where finally MLS topples Liga MX and CONCACAF Champions League?
It could be a little bit of both, let's be honest. We just mentioned how bad Santos Laguna is in league play. Fine. That's not Montreal's problem. Montreal's in their preseason. They not even started their season. Montreal dominated a team that's been in playing season right now that should be in better form. And look at this. 2008 to 2017, MLS 14 wins, okay? Look at the wins from 2018 to the present. You're starting to see how much less Liga MX wins in these knockout rounds. We're accustomed to seeing now in Major League Soccer teams knock out the occasional Liga MX team. It doesn't mean they do well in the final. Doesn't mean they win
right.
It. But this shouldn't be a surprise anymore. Not Montreal, not the Torontos, not the LAFCs, not whatever. We're accustomed to seeing this now. It's about getting over that hump and now winning it. But if there ever was a year, Seb, if you thought MLS had a chance, with these teams, these Liga MX teams in it now, this is probably the best chance.
Remember the pretexto, the classic used to be like, well, MLS is in preseason mode, MLS is in preseason mode. And they still are relative to Liga MX, but they're less in preseason mode now, right? You're closer to your season. You've been around longer. You've been in camp longer. So I think and that's really what it is, right? MLS is investing more. Like we see the players that are being competed for between Liga MX and MLS. And a lot of times now, Herc, they're ending up here in Major League Soccer. So the numbers don't lie right there, right? The trend is definitely there. But I don't know that I agree with you in terms of the actual teams in the field left, right? If you look at the three that are left from each league, León, Pumas, and Cruz Azul, Seattle, Revs, New York City. I think León and Cruz Azul I could trust to win this tournament. I think maybe Seattle I could trust. New York City, the Revs, I don't think I could trust them. I still think the Mexican three are stronger than the MLS three.
I've got a problem with León in international terms. They're so Jekyll and Hyde. They really are. Cruz Azul, great 11. After that, I don't know. It's your guess. And if I'm looking at the Revs, like the Revs are a team that I think can really do some damage in this tournament. And you say you trust Seattle. I love Seattle in MLS play. I don't know if I trust them in CCL. Do you not forget where they bowed out? How many times? I mean, I struggle to find, they take time to find this consistency, and it happens in Major League Soccer as well. So if you're telling me that you absolutely have faith in Liga MX, you're probably just going with the flag. You're probably just going with the history.
Hercules Gomez with his anti-Sounders ways. You heard it here first on Football Americas. Now, one MLS team that is not going to be around in the quarterfinals, your beloved Colorado Rapids. They were taking on Comunicaciones of Guatemala last night. Comunicaciones won 1-0 in the first leg. And here, Colorado gets their goal in the 16th minute from Robles.
Oh, Colorado. Is it Snow Clásico?
You would think the weather would have helped Colorado here, right?
Absolutely. You think Guatemalans are used to playing there?
Goes to a penalty shootout. It feels like a field goal kicking, right? You got to like clear the one spot. Oh, I would not want to take a penalty in the snow.
No, probably not the best thing to do. But how come the Guatemalan team was good at Comunicaciones, huh?
Yeah, they got the job done there, winning 4-3 on penalties. As the Colorado Rapids, the feel-good story of 2021 in Major League Soccer, go out in shocking fashion at home against Comunicaciones of Guatemala. Herc, let's talk blame game here, huh? Who are you going to blame for this defeat for Colorado?
Let me start off by saying how humiliating this should be for Major League Soccer and the Colorado Rapids. Padraig Smith, the general manager, it's your job to reinforce this team, right?
And you get money to do it.
You should be encouraged to spend. Or did all of a sudden all that money and all that encouragement go to SoFi Stadium here in Los Angeles? When you have, and we've seen this many times, one-offs in Major League Soccer, teams that do well one season, okay, you can get rewarded by a CONCACAF Champions League, represent Major League Soccer. We always hear how difficult it is to compete with Liga MX, how you want to close the gap, how you want to be the best league in this region and in the world. And here you are losing to Comunicaciones de Guatemala, who, by the way, have not been relevant to that extent. They've not been that big team in Guatemala since like 2014. Their highest player makes like $100,000 a year. When you look at the money spent and invested on each side, it should be embarrassing. You trade away Kellen Acosta. You loan out Cole Bassett. Where are your goal scorers? Where is your priority here? This is an embarrassment for Major League Soccer. It's an embarrassment for the Colorado Rapids. You would think playing in snow against a team from Guatemala would give you that edge, and yet you take it to penalty kicks, and yet you lose the game. Stop talking about Liga MX. Stop talking about closing the gap if you're struggling with Central America. Credit to Comunicaciones. Credit to the only Central American team right now, because Seattle will have to play Motagua, still left in this competition. But this is an embarrassment, a black eye for Major League Soccer.
It's an embarrassment, for sure. Is it that much of a surprise, though? Like, did you really think that Colorado was that good last year? If I gave you the four MLS teams, the four American MLS teams, and I said, who's going to go out of this tournament first? You'd have taken Colorado, right?
To a Mexican club? Sure. To Comunicaciones?
Different story.
Okay.
Different story. Let's run it back with the rest of the action from round of 16 in the CONCACAF Champions League as we get set to see the quarterfinal field. New York City FC advancing against Santos de Guapiles of Costa Rica, Herc, the defending MLS champions through to the last eight.
Go ahead, Alfredo Moreno. Look at that ex-US men's national team. Look at that guy. Oh, did he try to Rabona it, Seb?
I think he did. Do you, is that a little bit like insulting or not? Nah? We just love the flair.
Listen, it's somewhere in between, okay, you're feeling yourself to stop insulting the rival.
Showboating. Yeah, stop showboating.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
This one was never close. 6-0 then the final on aggregate. Pumas Saprissa, a couple of giants in terms of CONCACAF history. Pumas winning 6-3 on aggregate. Score some nervous moments throughout this tie.
Watch this finish. This game is a lot closer than the score line. I mean, it was a very good game. How about this? Look at this, Silky. Ooh, ah. Oh, you needed that one. Look at that. Look what it means to him.
Pumas then continue to do the work. And in the end, Saprissa could not respond. And you figured, right? Pumas, an overwhelming favorite in this tie. But I think we got to give the Costa Ricans credit.
Yeah, they made it very interesting. Good game. If you catch it, catch it.
León against Guastatoya. Pretty smooth sailing here.
Oh.
3-0, the final on aggregate score.
Oh, you see that finish outside the boot? Look at the first touch. Elias Hernandez! And look at this, outside the boot, side netting. Woo!
You don't think León can do it, huh? Sleeping.
That's right.
Sleeping on my beloved León. Okay, Monterrey, we've been following the story for the last couple days. Fans clashing with players. No, clashing is probably not the right word. Confronting players outside facilities after the failure at the FIFA Club World Cup. Some tense moments, potentially some dangerous moments from players. I certainly would not be comfortable if I were in their shoes. Herc, what do you make of it?
Lamentable. This is unfortunate. Where is security here? Why are the fans so close to the players? This could have easily escalated to something bigger, something more dangerous. You never want to see this. It's upsetting. It's not a reflection of how good these fan bases, especially Monterrey, can be.
One of Rayados' more experienced players, of course, Hector Moreno. Herc, you caught up with him earlier today. Let's listen in to that interview.
No. Looking back right now, the only thing I I'm thankful that nothing happened, you know, at the end. You know, it was something that was out of control. And at some point, after everything was clear, people, they just come to show some disagreements or to put some pressure on us or to give us some input for what they're thinking as a supporter. But at the end of the day, we as a player, we also feel frustrated because the result didn't come so far. We feel sad because of the results on the Club World Cup wasn't as we wanted to be. You know, we always were dreaming about fighting for the final with Chelsea, of course. But at the end of the day, we had a bad day. And the day we could not have a bad day. And that was the losing against Al Ahly. And that was it, you know. Of course, they can be sad. They can be disappointed. They can disagree with us on the field, on the stadium, but I think when it goes further than that, nobody wants that. Nobody expects that people come to your training ground. Or...
Yeah, absolutely, Hector. I wanted to ask you about Javier Aguirre, who's debatably the best coach in Mexico's history, one of the most successful coaches, without a doubt, but finds himself under a lot of pressure. A guy like Javier Aguirre, with an important game coming up, San Luis this weekend, and then two games next week in León and América. What's been the message from Javier Aguirre to the players?
I agree with you with him being the best coach in the history of Mexico. You know, he's been everywhere and he's won many things. And he has a lot of experience and he's been in difficult situations as well in the past. So he has tried to take all the pressure, not putting on to us. He tries to give us freedom. He tried to let us be, you know, during trainings, of course, pushing hard because we know when the things didn't work out the way you want, you have to push harder, you have to train harder, you have to be mad at trainings and all these kind of things. But also he gives you the calm to go out there and play and try to enjoy, of course, because it still is a game, but with the responsibility that we are playing for Rayados, you know, the club with the most expectative in the league.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And of course, Liga MX available for you on ESPN Plus and ESPN Deportes Rayados. You can watch them Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time against Atlético de San Luis. All right, Herc, it feels like just yesterday we were in Portland for MLS Cup. And look at that, the MLS season just about to start in only a few days' time this upcoming weekend. So why don't we do a quick season preview edition of Book It. What's the first category here? Why don't we go with Young Player of the Year? Who's your Young Player of the Year, Hercules Gomez, for the 22 MLS season?
Jaquiel Marshall-Routy. Look at my man, the 70-year-old from Brampton, Ontario, the $20 million man. Why do I say the right back is a $20 million man? My man, Toronto FC has already put a $20 million evaluation on this player. Right back, right wing back, European exposure, I should say, scouts all over him. The Guardian has featured him. Now, check this out. Under Bob Bradley, who knows a thing or two about giving teenagers a chance to excel and shine. We talked to Marcus Beasley, we talked Jozy Altidore, and in his time, yes, Juan Agudelo with the U.S. men's national team. So look at this signing right here, or I shouldn't say signing, look at this potential European signing, and I think he's going to do big things this year. The slate is open for him to start with Bob Bradley and Toronto FC.
Yeah, a couple of days ago, I think I was asking you about Toronto FC's academy. Did they have anybody? This kid's getting a lot of buzz right now. I'm going to go with a little bit more obvious pick, I think, because we know what his brother can do. I'm going to go Paxton Aronson of the Philadelphia Union. Now, a lot of this is based on what Brendan Aronson has done in his time, but let's look at the trajectory, right? This will be his third kind of full professional season. He had a season in the USL. I think he had 12, 13 games last year, a couple goals. If you look at Brendan Aronson's progression, and we think the two will be similar, Paxton could have that breakout season either in 2022 or in 2023. I think it comes a season earlier because, let's be honest, the Philadelphia Union are going to play this kid. So I'm really excited about the future for Paxton Aaronson. He's my bet for Young Player of the Year, and I don't think you can make a bad bet knowing what his brother is.
Jonathan Tannenwald, our good friend of the Philly Inquirer, says that many rate him higher than his brother Brendan at that age.
All right, let's go to our next topic here. Most valuable player. These are the six that we've chosen for you to choose from. Herc, who are you going with?
Give me Albert Ruznek. Give me my man Albert Ruznek. Where's he going to play? He's not going to play anymore with RAL Salt Lake. He's going to a team that generally gets to the show, that generally does well in Major League Soccer. The playmaker is now going to have around him Nicolás Lodeiro, Jordan Morris, Raul Ruiz Diaz, Christian Roldan. Oh, yeah. And he doesn't do so bad himself. Benefiting from those around him, my man's going to have a monster season. I just see Albert Ruznek being this year's MVP.
I do follow you on Twitter, and earlier today you were telling people to bet their mortgage on Raul Ruiz Diaz to be the golden boot in Major League Soccer.
I said it was a good bet.
If he wins a golden boot, the score is going to get the MVP. But I like Albert Ruznek. It's a fair prediction. I'm going way off the board with mine, really reaching and kind of out on the edge of the limb. One Javier Chicharito Hernandez. Now, I think he would have had a decent shot at MVP or at least MVP consideration last year. The only thing that happened is that rut, you know, that maybe 3 month spell late spring into the summer when he didn't play. If you look at the actual productivity of this player, 17 goals in 21 games. Or can you imagine what his number would be if he gets to 30 or 32 appearances? Dude, I think he's very, very likely to get over 20. And I think he might have a sniff at 25. I don't know what the Galaxy will be, but I do think that Chicharito will have a monster season. And you know, if he's in LA and scoring goals, he's in the MVP discussion, probably a finalist.
He was out of the discussion last season because they weren't a playoff team. They'll be a playoff team this year. And I agree with you. If he stays healthy, that's the biggest if, he's going to be productive.
Let's go from the best to the worst. Wooden Spoon, who do you think will be the worst team, Hercules, in Major League Soccer?
For this, can we go with my friend, the head coach of Charlotte FC, Miguel Angel Ramirez, please? I want Miguel Angel Ramirez, please.
O sea, esperemos un poco a ver cómo acaba el roster. Y cuando acabemos el roster, me vuelves a hacer la misma pregunta y te digo, pues mira, ahora la verdad lo veo un poquito más cerca. Ahora estamos jodidos.
There you go, Seb. On to you.
That's it.
I got nothing
you're
else.
You're right. Hey, look, if the coach is telling you we're screwed and you're an expansion team, I think it's a pretty good bet. So you know how you always say whenever we say who's going to win the MLS Cup? Who's your preseason MLS Cup pick? Your default is Seattle. And sometimes I think it's because of your pro Sounders ways, but sometimes I think it's because you're smart. You know there's a very, very good bet that the Seattle Sounders are going to be in the big games in MLS. Well, guess what? When it comes to Wooden Spoon, I think it's a very, very easy bet to say that FC Cincinnati is going to take home that title again. Look, they've just been in this spot for too many years for me to say I'm going to take them out of the race. I know there's been significant investment in this team, but it feels like it's significant investment without any real idea of what to do. They do have more MLS savvy management, especially in the front office this year, so I think they'll do better in terms of finding the right talent, working the salary cap to fit this league and finally get some success in MLS. But man, there's just so much history of failure, Herc, in Cincinnati. They got to be a wooden spoon favorite, if not candidate. But I like
you've got no heart. I'm with Pat Noonan on this one.
Okay. All right. Surprise team. I guess this could be surprise, good or bad. Which one did you go? Do you go good surprise or do you go bad surprise?
I went good surprise. I went with FC Dallas. Nico Esteves, the new coach at FC Dallas. He's got some shiny new toys to play with. They're going to be a lot better than last season. Let's be honest. Along with that factory, La Fabrica de Fuerzas Básicas, that great academy, they're finally going to invest. Listen, Jesús Ferreira, to a lot of U.S. men's national team fans, maybe the butt of some jokes, but he's been very good for FC Dallas. Paul Arriola has been a very good Major League Soccer player. And Alan Velasco, the new 19-year-old signing for Independiente. That's a very scary front three for a team that's going to be very hardworking and a tough place to play. That is Dallas. And in those summer months, the dog days of summer, this team should climb the standings. I think they will surprise a lot of people this season.
All right. So FC Dallas, Herc's surprise team. I'm going to go with a team that we really battered quite a bit last year. Mm. And that was Inter Miami. Now, last year, I think they deserved quite a bit of that criticism. But here's the thing. They were so bad last year, and I really like what they did. I mean, they blew the thing up, right? 17 players gone. I mean, that's a huge, huge roster turnover. That is really impressive work. I think the other thing here is that you got to trust Chris Henderson, right? I mean, The guy just he's got so much experience in MLS and success in MLS. And so I think going into Miami now, they got to sort it out. They've had time. It's got to be now. They're going to be a surprise team. They're going to sneak in the playoffs. Plus, you interviewed Phil Neville, and I heard he was very, very good. So I think he can get guys to run through a wall for him. Let's see if he can do that with Inter Miami.
Very good. Chris Henderson will do good things as well.
MLS Cup, Herc. Let's put our money where our mouth is. Who do you think will be MLS Cup champion?
Let me shock the world when I say the Seattle Sounders are your 2022 MLS Cup champions. This is easy for me, Seb. Law of probabilities. The last 6 years, they've made 4 finals. They've won 2 of them. If you're trying to think of a team that's consistent, since 2017, they've been no worse than second in the Western Conference. I just mentioned Albert Ruznak as an MVP. I told you, and I told everybody, plus 1,000 on Raul Ruiz Diaz Golden Boot is great, great value. Last year, Nico Lodeiro injured. Jordan Morris injured. They're back and healthy. This is also the best defensive team last year in Major League Soccer. Oh, by the way, Brian Schmetzer still coaches this team, and they still play in Major League Soccer. So what do we know to be true? They get to the final. They win finals.
All right. Seattle is a team that I think is a pretty safe bet. What about Atlanta United? That's where I'm going to go for MLS Cup. Now, I think I said this sometime back in like October, November, when they were starting to roll right before the playoffs and they were starting to make some of these big signings. I said, I'm going to put Atlanta as my way too early 2022 MLS Cup prediction. So I think I'm going to stick with it. I like what Atlanta United is doing. I like what they're building. And I have a lot of faith in Gonzalo Pineda. I remember us being Herc up in Seattle during the Western Conference final back in the day. And he was talking about how he was game planning with you in an interview for LAFC and Carlos Vela. And so I just have so much respect for the footballing mind of Pineda that I think he is really, now given the time, going to find something special with this Atlanta United team. And you know what? MLS needs Atlanta United. MLS needs Atlanta United. All right, where are we going next? Bold prediction, something we do quite a bit on this show. Bold prediction of the year. Herc, what is your bold prediction for 2022?
Jordi Alexander Mihailovic will score double-digit goals and get double-digit assists. Thus, he will be in the conversation for Major League Soccer MVP. This is a player that is on the cusp of playing with the national team. Plays up in Montreal. He's a very good player, set-piece specialist, very good soccer IQ in the final third. He can pass, he can finish. I think he's really putting it all together. And I think they're going to be a very dynamic team in Montreal. Do not be surprised when Jordi Mihailovic has those goals and those assists, and he's in that conversation. You heard it here first.
Yeah, that's a bold prediction. I think he's got, maybe a career high of 4 goals. So if you're saying double-digit goals and double-digit assists, it's bold. My bold prediction is going to be the Portland Timbers will miss the playoffs. That's right. The team that made it to MLS Cup last year and hosted MLS Cup is not going to make the postseason this year. Now, maybe in MLS, that's not that bold of a prediction, because just because you made MLS Cup 1 year doesn't mean anything. Just because you win MLS Cup doesn't mean you're going to make the playoffs the next year. Just ask the Columbus Crew. Some of this, if I'm honest, has to do with vibes. I don't think there's great vibes around the Portland Timbers organization right now with everything going on with the Andy Polo situation and the Merritt Paulson situation, which we've addressed ad nauseum on this show. But beyond that, they're just that little bit older. And I think there's got to be some type of hangover from losing an MLS Cup final at home and all the kind of wear, both physically and emotionally, that would have taken on this Timbers team. The one bit of faith I got in Portland, Giovanni Savarese. If anybody can kind of take a group that's under fire and sort things out, I do believe it's the Timbers manager. On Sunday, from the shirts to the pitch, we got the LA Galaxy opening up the season against the defending champions, New York City FC. That one Sunday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming live on the ESPN app. All right, so that'll do it for this edition of Football Americas. But we have a big, big show coming for you on Monday, and another big interview. Jerdan Shaqiri, Herc, I heard you. Did he get upset with you?
He may have thought I was you, but he definitely watches the show, and he had some choice words for us.
Okay, all right. So you're going to see that. You're going to see that on Monday. Remember, you can download this edition of the show in podcast form on the ESPN FC feed, wherever you get your podcast. For Hercules Gomez.
Well done, Seb. You did well. You did well. Thank you in your bathroom, but you did well.
I'm Sebby. We'll see you Monday.